Hi, I'm Lucia.
And I'm Nell, and this is Totally Normal About That, a podcast where we explore various pieces of queer media and the things we love, hate, and love to hate about them. This week we're feeling totally normal about Dairy Girls. Let's dive in.
Yes, I found this show so delightful. I'm really excited that we're talking about it. Friend of the podcast, Lyra, actually recommended this to us. She guested on our Sense8 episodes, and it was just so fun to watch. Like, I'm really excited that we got to it so quickly.
Yeah, this show is so much fun. It's one of those shows that's like a little bit cringy, but it's cringy in the way where you watch it and you go like, oh no, I too was a 16-year-old girl once, and I recognize more of myself in this than I would like to right now.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like the comedy is you're laughing at them, but also you're laughing at yourself and the person that you used to be, and like you're laughing at the relatable experiences that surpass, like, you know, nationality or culture. There's the episode they have where they're talking about what are the similarities between Catholics and Protestants, and at the end they write parents, and it was just like, that perfectly captures how I feel about this show, like those things that are so universal that we just relate to them even when we're, you know, from an entirely different place.
Yeah, absolutely. You just watch this and it so captures that feeling of like being a teenager and like arguing with your parents about things and feeling like everything is extremely unjust. And obviously, like, the upbringing that you and I had was very different than the upbringing of teens mm-hmm. growing up during the Troubles in Northern mm-hmm. Ireland, but there are some things in common.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing because obviously we are American, you know, from the Midwest USA, and we were born like right around the time that the show is set in. So, I mean, these are teenagers. These are people that are honestly closer to my parents' age, or at least my mom's age than probably to mine in the show. But given that they are teens, like it just has that relatable feel. And there's a lot of stuff in this show that, despite being set in Northern Ireland in the 90s, that is still, like, incredibly relatable. Like you said, we don't have any experience really with living in Ireland or the UK in general, or, you know, anything to do with the Troubles. That's not something that, as Americans, we can really relate to. But I do think a lot of the messages in this show about the way that they connect to each other as far as, like, friendships and community and, like, how they understand one another, and the messages about, like, being young people, like, during political strife and how it affects them, and the hope that they carry, especially at the end of the show, are something that we can still relate to, given, you know, the circumstances of our own country. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, I guess something to keep in mind, we're, you know, not super educated about a lot of the political background of this show, and we'll have a couple things mm-hmm. to say in terms of, like, what it means for the messaging, but it's not like we're going to be diving super deeply into the history of that, because
they
we're
don't
not really
teach
in a
Northern
position to
Ireland,
discuss it.
Northern Ireland's history to us here in the U.S. So,
no, we're pretty centrally focused. I mean, there's plenty to probably say about, like, colonization, but
oh goodness, yeah.
In general, yeah, I think we're going to be focusing more on the actual relationships in the show, and kind of the events of the actual show. So, but I don't know. I found it really delightful, and I honestly think that despite not having a lot of the background knowledge about the actual, like, detailed events of the Troubles, like, it was still pretty easy to follow. And it really grounded the show and made a lot of things really impactful. Like you said, there's some stuff about the teens and their behavior that's kind of cringe, but, like, again, that's part of just, you know, the fact that they're teens. But, like, rooting a lot of that stuff in a specific time and place, like, does, I think, help some of that and make it more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked that basically, like, one of the most interesting thing about this show is... One of the most interesting things about this show is that the plot, there's not, like, a plot. There's no overarching plot except for what's mm-hmm. happening in the background with the Troubles. Like, that's the right. thing. That's the thread that keeps coming up is, like, there's all this stuff going on.
Right.
And everything else is much more slice of life. Like, there aren't a lot of, like, two-parter episodes. There aren't a lot of episodes that even reference previous episodes. Mm-hmm. And so... The one through line is the setting that they're in, this sort of political conflict and this time of unrest and turmoil.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's very interesting because the setting and place really, what it does is it, like, not only grounds the show, but it allows the plot to be about this coming of age story for the teens. Mm-hmm. So it, like, it could have easily had a very sitcom-y kind of feel where it's like a Seinfeld sort of thing where you're just watching the characters and there's not necessarily any kind of overarching plot or, like, purpose to the storytelling. It's just, you're just watching a group of friends. But having that political conflict and everything and the growth we see in the characters kind of attached to it really makes this about more than just them being friends. It's about, like, who they're becoming as people and how their relationships with one another is shaping them to be, like, the adults that they're going to become. And we really see that kind of culminate, like, at the end of the third season.
Absolutely, yeah. So we see, really, at the end of the show, like, the way they wrap it up with them all turning 18 and it being sort of a year after the events of the season 3 finale, kind of, and mm-hmm. they're coming, it's the Good Friday Agreement, and, like, it's a big, mm-hmm. it's a big deal, and you kind of see that the conflicts they're starting to deal with are more adult conflicts. So, like, everything mm-hmm. going on with Michelle and her feelings about her brother and all of that is more sort of real world and less sort of sheltered than some of the other sort of conflicts they deal with throughout the series. And so you do see that they've grown up and that they've changed and that they're trying to figure out who they want to be in the world they live in.
Yeah. Yeah, and so obviously we have the five main friends, the five Dairy Girls. We have Erin, who is essentially the primary character. You know, it centers around her and her family and then her group of friends. So we have Erin Quinn. And then we have her cousin Orla, who lives with her. So it's Erin, her two parents, and her youngest sister, and then her aunt, her cousin, and her grandfather all living together. We have her best friend Claire, who throughout the show we learn is a lesbian. We have her best friend Michelle, and then Michelle's cousin James, who we learn immediately is English and is therefore essentially forced to attend the girls' school because there were concerns that he would be bullied if he attended the boys' school because he's English, and there's obviously a lot of conflict going on between the people of Northern Ireland and the English. So he's essentially relegated to being a dairy girl.
Yeah, so the first sort of episode is about him, about James moving here, and in part about them just being like, oh my god, there's, like, now there's this guy here, and he's, even worse, he's English. Like, this is terrible news for us, and them sort of starting to settle him very sort of begrudgingly into their group. And there's a pretty funny plot line of, like, because he has to go to the girls' school, there aren't any men's restrooms at this school. And they're right. Just all treating it like, well, duh, you can't use the women's restrooms. Like, what do you... No. Like, no. And he's like, well, then what am I supposed to do? And they're like, that's not our problem.
Right. They're just not concerned. Like I said, you know, we have Erin's family, too. So we have her parents, Mary and Jerry, which I think is adorable. As Jerry says at one point, we're Mary and Jerry and we're living in Derry. Like, okay. We have Mary's father, Joe, who basically spends the entirety of his show being stubborn and, you know, picking on Jerry. We have Sarah, who, what is a word that you would use to describe Sarah?
Flighty, perhaps?
Yeah, that might be a good one. I feel like kooky, maybe? I don't know. She's unusual.
Well, in the last season, where, it turns out that accidentally, Sarah accepted a proposal because she didn't realize that that's what's going on. Jerry was just like, she's not like other people. She's
right.
She's different.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that is a great way to describe her. And Orla is very much like her.
Perhaps a bit ungrounded from reality, one might.
Yes. We don't learn anything about Orla's father. Show basically just acts like he doesn't exist. Which is honestly fine, like, you know. They just, like, don't address him at all. The other kids' parents are kind of around, but, like, really they're in the background. They only show up when there's, like, a conflict with the kids and they need to come, like, address it or something. And then we have one of my other very beloved characters, Sister Michael, who is the headmistress so at the girls' school.
I love her so... I know that... Listen, I want to be her when I grow up.
Right, like, she's incredible and I love her so much.
Everything she says is just, like, absolutely perfect. I admire her deeply.
She's just wonderful. She's such a mood, and I appreciate the way that she's just able to so precisely insult people.
She tells Jenny Joyce, who's sort of the main, I'd say, like, antagonistic force for the girls. Like, she's their classmate, who's their sort of rival. She sort of says at one point, she's like, you will go far in life, Jenny, but you won't be well-liked.
Right. Right, yes, she does.
Something about, like, you know, there have been all these atrocities recently, and, and this play will be
added to the list.
Added to the list.
I love that, like when we meet her, one of the first things we meet is Jenny Joyce and her friend Ashling is, like, they're singing a song or whatever to introduce people to the school and everything. It's the beginning of a new school year. And Sister Michael is like, is this not on the list of songs that I've, you know, banned, essentially? And the other teacher is going through the list going, this. Nope, it's not on there. She's like, add it to the list. We're not doing this again. And it's just her whole attitude. I just love it. She's very much just like one of those people who's eager to say no. She just delights in shutting things down.
Well, in the very first episode, where the girls are like, we're gonna stick together about this whole bullying thing, and then Claire goes off on a rant about how it was all Michelle, and she just says, well, I think it's fair to say that we all just lost a bit of respect for you there, Claire.
Right. Oh, it's so good.
And, like, so good. The thing about her is that it would be so easy to think that she, like, doesn't care about the students. Because there's even the thing where she, like, implies that they failed their GCSEs. And then yes! She just says it was a bit of a slow day. But at the end of the show, like, one of the things she's dealing with is the fact that the bishop is trying to relocate her and, like, remove her from her post here. And she is not here for that. Like, she cares about this school and she cares about these girls, and she has clearly realized that her role in all of this is the role she has taken on, is to be the sort of blunt and sarcastic adult who is going to help make these teenagers learn a little perspective. Like, she's just like, you're all ridiculous. I'm just going to be here to tell you all to handle yourselves.
Yes. So, we didn't say this, but if you've watched the show, you should know. And if you haven't watched the show, I don't know why you're here. Go watch the show and then come back, because it's not going to make sense otherwise. But, I mean, obviously one of the main elements of this show is that all of the Derry girls are Catholic, and their, you know, their families are Catholic. And in Northern Ireland at this time, people are primarily divided up as either Catholic or Protestant, with the Catholics primarily being Irish and identifying with like a certain Irish political view, versus the Catholics or the Protestants, who are primarily in alignment with like British kind of rule. So they're already in many ways like in the minority for being Catholic. Mm-hmm. And then their girls, their poor, which I mean is kind of like in the show often associated with them being Catholic. And so they're attending the school. And I think what I appreciate about Sister Michael a lot is like, it's not that she doesn't, like you said, care about these girls or like want them to succeed. I think a lot of what she's doing is not trying to discourage them, but like actually set them up for success, because there's an episode where we have another teacher, her name is Miss De Bruyne, and she comes in and is like basically trying to inspire these girls. You can be all of these things and do all of this stuff, and really pushing them to kind of rebel and like, you know, live outside the lines or whatever. And she's very like in opposition, I guess, to the way that Sister Michael treats the girls. Mm-hmm. Not that she and Sister Michael are like in opposition, but like, it's just a very different way of approaching these kids. But she also doesn't have any kind of like investment in their actual future. Or, like, care. Right. And Sister Michael clearly does, and is, like, you know, pushing them to do well. I don't think it's that she wants them to give up or, like, have no hope or dreams for their future. It's more that she's just like, she lives in a world that is very, very complicated. You know, obviously there's all the political strife going on, and there's like tragedies that are happening that are just unexplainable. You know, there are young people that have died that were completely innocent, like in a strife that's like entirely out of her hands. And I think that just influences the way that she approaches things with these students.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's someone who wants them to be a little more reality-based, I think, in a lot of ways. Like, yeah. She's not trying to say, like, you can't be idealistic, but she's also saying, like, sometimes this is getting in the way of the reality of the world. So, like, you know, there's this thing where Orla is talking about the rain or whatever, and how it's, like, Our Lady in heaven, you know, who weeps, and Sister Michael's like, how old are you? And she's like, 15, and she's like, all right, so we may need to re-examine that. Or
right.
Or, like, when Claire is like, oh my god, God's gonna hate us. And she's like, God is ambivalent about you at best. Like, he doesn't care.
Right.
And she, like, doesn't seem to actually be particularly religious. Like, there are definitely times where she'll say things and she's like, if that's real, whatever.
She, at one point, I love her so much. At one point, she straight up says one of the reasons that she, like, became a nun and, like, joined the church was for the accommodation.
For free, like, free housing.
And you honestly know what? Good for her.
In this economy, listen.
Right. And she's such an interesting character because she doesn't do anything to imply to me that she has romantic or sexual interest in anyone in the show.
Right.
Like, and there's even several times where stuff comes up regarding sex, and she's just, like, she's not put off by it. It's not like she is necessarily uncomfortable about the conversation. She's just like, okay, that's something that is happening in my vicinity. That's something being discussed. So I don't look at her and I'm like, oh, maybe she was, like, a lesbian or something. I'm just like, no, she's just has no interest in, like, being with a person in a relationship. Yeah. She's like, ah, yes, I will be single and enjoy my life by myself, unbothered by other people.
Yes.
Except these students that I took on the burden of caring for.
It's so funny, though, because, like, every once in a while, Father Peter will show up, like, the priest or whatever, and every single time she's just so mad. She's just like, oh my god, I joined this to not have to deal with smarmy men and their hair and their ridiculous hair, and now he's doing, yes, every time he shows up she's just like, oh, it's you,
right? She's like, mother of god, what am I do, like, what is he doing here?
she's just like, she's offended by his presence every single time. And in the first, fantastic. I think the first time we meet him is in, like, I don't know, very early in the show. But
right, first couple of episodes.
Yeah. There's a point where they're talking about the, like, trip to France or whatever. And that there's a trip. And I think he's the one announcing the trip, maybe. Maybe not. No, it's not. No, it's not that.
I think it's in the episode where they have to take their, like, history finals.
And then
determined to get out of the test.
The crying statue, yeah. And she's just so, like, because she sees that the girls are all just, like, totally, totally aflutter about him. And she's just like, oh.
To be fair, James is very aflutter about him, too. For different reasons. No. But he definitely is. And there is a running gag in this show that everyone believes that James is gay. And he's consistently, like, having to correct people and tell them he's not gay to their absolute, like, nonchalance about it and just completely ignoring his corrections. Or just like, yeah, whatever, yeah, you can be gay if you want. But it's kind of funny because I actually think it starts in this episode, like, right before he meets Father Peter, because he stays the night at Aaron's house. They all do, to study.
Yeah.
So they all stay the night. and they come down in the morning to, like, get breakfast before the test, and Joe is just like, did you sleep here? And he's like, yeah. In Aaron's room? Like, I know he's gay, but still, he's a boy.
And well, he's and like, then,
I'm not gay!
Well, and then they're like, oh, but you're British, like, you're English. And they're like, too bad.
Like, it'd be better if you were gay. Unfortunately, yeah. You're English. But it's so funny because, like, they're saying this, and he's like, I'm not gay, and then proceeds to develop this giant, like, crush on Father Peter. And I was just like, it's just very funny to me that those events, like, happen basically simultaneously in this very early episode. And he's not, but, like, it's just... It's funny that they have this, which kind of continues, and when really the reason that they believe he's gay in the first place is because they forced him to go to the girls' school because he's English, and right. They're telling him, better for you to be gay than be English, and he's just like, the only reason you think that is because I'm going to this school and surrounded by these girls, and because you keep referring to me as a girl, like...
Right, and like... let's be clear, like, people who aren't, you shouldn't call people gay just because of certain traits they have, but in this case, they seem to be treating it as this would be a positive, like, they're like, it would be better right. for everyone if he were gay, actually.
Right, like, it actually is really nice because they're not ever actually, like, mean to him about it, or, like, I don't know, they pick on him a lot when he expresses that he likes girls, not because necessarily they don't believe him, but because when he does it, they find a way to, like, turn it into misogyny, and they're just like, you're a terrible person, you're disgusting for saying this.
Well, and, like, he develops a relationship with the young woman from Ukraine, who is an international... exchange or whatever for victims of the Chernobyl disaster, and they spend the entire episode doing everything they can to disrupt that. They're like, no, he can't.
Well, to be fair, just Aaron. Michelle is like, he's a virgin, he'll probably never have an opportunity to have sex again because no one will want him because he's English, so
that's true.
Let this girl have sex with him. But yes, Aaron is very determined that this cannot happen. It's also kind of sweet because we do pretty early on learn that Claire is a lesbian.
Yes, the end of the first season.
Which is a whole event, and we'll definitely take some time and talk about, like, the details of kind of how that all plays out for her. But I do also appreciate that the adults in her life are just kind of like, okay, you're a lesbian, and, like, are very accepting about it. Throughout the show, both the kids and the adults consistently say very ignorant things about queer people, but it's never done in, like, a ill-intentioned way. It's just they only know one or two gay people, and they're just... saying, like, ignorant things.
There's so many times in times where all, like, the parents will be there like, oh yeah, I heard that town's ripe with lesbians. Like,
right, like they're trying so hard to be supportive and they're just doing it not that well. But, like, they're really trying, and I do appreciate this again because it was, like, in the 90s as well. This was long before you know, gay marriage was legal in Northern Ireland. And again, that is just one milestone among many, but, like, you know, we're talking 30 years ago. And so it's just a really interesting thing to watch because there isn't actual, like, ill-intentioned homophobic behavior from any of the adults, but you still see, like, the impacts of just their ignorance. And I appreciate that they're at least trying, but sometimes, like you said, there's moments where you're just like, oh no, like, why is this happening?
It's all over with lesbians now.
Right. There's one moment where they're going to buy, like, concert tickets or whatever, and they're telling Claire, like, hey, this other girl is a lesbian, but they keep calling her a lesbie.
And she's like, you can't say that. Stop saying
right, Claire is very bothered. She's like, you can't use that word. And, like, Michelle's defense is all the lesbians say it. Like, it's like, okay, but you're not a lesbian. You don't get to say it.
Right.
And then Claire is offended because she's like, just because she is a lesbian doesn't mean I will like her. And they're like, but this might be your only chance. There aren't very many of you. Like,
it's so funny. And, like, the episode where Claire comes out, what happens is that Aaron has taken over, like, being the editor of the school paper or magazine or whatever. And she finds an anonymous letter written in about being a lesbian at an all-girls Catholic school or whatever, and she decides that's going to be their big story. So she prints it, and then everybody in school is talking about who the wee lesbian is.
Yes. Notably, Claire is very against publishing.
She does not
this.
Want them to publish it. And it causes right. a big fight between them. Like,
it does.
There's a big fight. And then, of course, like,
there's a subsequent fight when Claire comes out.
Like, Aaron is really upset about this whole thing. And then Michelle manages to make it worse by pretending that it's her.
Which no one believed. Because no. why would they? Like, it's a really interesting episode because Claire, for one, I really appreciate that the way they write Claire is not a traditional, like, butch lesbian stereotype.
Right.
I have nothing
right.
against butch lesbians, and, like, those stereotypes exist for a reason, and they're, you know, but they exist a lot in media, and in this case, it just really works for me that she doesn't fit a traditional stereotype of a lesbian, so it is a surprise to her friends and family when they find out that she is, and if anything, they're very confused, because they're like, you don't act or look like a lesbian, and she's just like, excuse me, like, I don't think that there's... like a mold for us.
Right.
Like,
right.
I like girls and therefore I am. At one point, another kid in the school says that she's kind of short for a lesbian. She's like, I don't think that there's a height requirement.
No.
but like, part of her personality is that she is a very anxious person.
Right.
And she's easily, stressed out or bothered by, like, breaking the rules or like doing poorly in school, so when she finds out that Aaron is going to publish this anonymous writing assignment, she's obviously very stressed, and I understand why Aaron wouldn't suspect her, because this just seems like a normal thing within Claire's personality to be concerned about publishing this without permission. And, you know, Aaron is very surprised when she learns that it was Claire who wrote it. And then Aaron proceeds to basically do and say all of the wrong things that you should not say or do when your friend comes out to you. And I kind of appreciate that she does in this show, like, that they let her do that and they wrote her that way, because she does still love Claire and they are still friends at the end and like work through things, but it would be easy to give her this, like, wonderful coming out experience, and instead her best friend is immediately, like, upset about it and is just like, no, you can't be a lesbian, I didn't know this, and also, like, I don't like you like that. And Claire's just like, I don't know what your problem is.
Right, like, I'm not interested in, like, sorry, but not all lesbians are into you.
And the thing is, as Aaron is reacting, like, I don't even think that she actually believes that. Like, the way she's responding, I don't think she actually believes that, like, Claire likes her or that any of this. I just think that she's shocked that her friend has this secret and didn't tell her, and she's not able to slow down and make it about Claire. She can't help, like, make it about herself.
Right.
And the fact that her friend kept this from her. And it's just like, I don't know, there's something about it that I was just like, oh, this is, yes, she's a teenager. This is a very teenage response it's to such someone a teenage coming out response, to you.
Yes. One of the funniest episodes with all this is that is the episode where it's, we don't actually see the girls really in it. Or James, mm-hmm. It's the flashback episode where for the high school reunion, and
mm-hmm.
they find out that like Deirdre's cousin is gay or something. Like Michelle's yes. mom brings her cousin Rob, who it turns out is gay or something, and they're just and Claire's parents are like, "Oh, our daughter's gay or whatever," and he's like, "How's she coming?" They have this cold conversation about like how's she coming along with that. And it's like, "Oh, well, you know, she's still it's still early."
Right, they say like she's not as fully established as yourself. Like, it's a process, and he's like, "Hey, you know what? Chances of teen pregnancy go way down with a lesbian daughter." And they're like, "Yeah, that's amazing!" And, like, they're so excited about it.
It's
so good.
It's so funny. The whole thing is. Like, just the whole conversation that they're having.
It's all so delightful. I also appreciate there's an episode where they have a Chinese student named May, who notably is not from China. She's just from another part of Ireland. Moves to Derry and to their school. And they do this really funny thing where the girls are looking to, like, add her to their friend group, because wouldn't it be so, like, cracker if we had a Chinese girl as part of our group? Like, we'd be so diverse and whatever. And she's just like, "Yeah, I don't care. I'm not interested in being your friend." And then she finds out one of them is a lesbian and is like, "Oh, wouldn't it be so cracker if I had a, I always wanted a gay friend." And I'm like,
right.
I love that they kind of flipped that around and, like, made it about one of them, and she was just like, "Oh yes, like I want to be friends with you." And what's so funny is she says, "I always wanted a gay friend. I preferred a man, but like this will do." Like, it's just, I don't like it. There's just, again, there's something about it that I was just like, "Oh, they're really just leaning into like all of the cringe things and all of the stereotypical weird and uncomfortable things people do and say regarding gay people," but like, again, in like just a really funny way that I loved watching.
Yeah, like this whole thing is like, yeah. Oh right, I'm a raging homosexual. This is correct. He is. Seriously, our daughter's a gay. That's what I said. That's what I told him. I mean, what are the chances?
I love that conversation so much. I also love that, like, so, like you said, Jenny Joyce is kind of the antagonistic character of the show, because even though she is also Catholic and a girl, she is not poor. Like, notably,
correct.
The one really big difference is, you know, her and her family have quite a bit of money. Her father is a surgeon, so... I think Deirdre at one point says that he's handled more bullets than the IRA. Like, so, and we hear repeatedly that he took out Orla's tonsils, so.
Yes, and refuses to give them back, according to Orla. Right, Orla
is insistent she wants them back. So, Jenny obviously has all this money and kind of flaunts it in the faces of the other girls and uses it to, you know, kind of keep herself as, you know, top dog and, you know, popular within the class. And at the episode you're talking about where they're kind of having like the class reunion for the moms, we meet the surgeon father, who notably does not talk. Like, he just, we learned that he can, he just doesn't.
And the reason that it seems like he doesn't is because anytime he says anything, he gets in trouble for saying the wrong thing.
He miscommunicates things and says the wrong thing, and then, like, it's like, better to just not. And honestly, like, ideal situation. Married to a surgeon with a lot of money who doesn't talk.
Like, right. Like, dream. That's the
right.
dream.
Right. It sounds like Jeanette Joyce is living, like, her best life.
Absolutely. I do also like that they spend the entire evening trying to find ways to make him talk, and that includes Rob going over and just planting such a kiss on him, and they have this little smooch, and then they pull back, and Rob just is like, and then he just goes, and it's just this, like, little like, frowny
just,
head
just
shake.
Just shakes his head.
Just with, like, a facial expression that's just like, no.
Right. Not for me. And Rob was just like, okay, it's impossible. He can't talk. We can't make him. Like, I've done everything that could be done. I also love that he's Canadian Rob, a.k.a. American Brad.
Yeah, well, yeah. They call him American Rob, and he's like, I'm from Montreal. And then Joe's like, oh, I've never heard of the Montreal in America. There's one in Canada, though. And he's like...
like I just Sarah keeps calling him Brad, and he's like, my name is Rob, and she's just like, I don't know, Brad just seems like a very American name. And he's like, I'm not American.
I love that throughout the entirety of the show, the running theme is that just people just don't listen to men at all, like, except Joe.
That is so true. You know what? I think that's maybe part of why I love the men in this show, like. Because that is one thing, and, you know, it's, I talked to Lyra about it when I first watched this. I was just like, man, I have a real soft spot for the men in this show. But I think part of it is just, like, they're normal men, but they're not, like, bro-y in Correct. Any way, or, like, frat guys, or, like, hyper masculine, whatever. Like, they're masculine men, but they embody it in a way that feels very, like, healthy masculinity,
right?
Outside of, like, you know, some of Joe's, like, crotchety old man behavior and his impulsive need to, like, pick on Jerry. But I think we see, like, throughout the show that this is not even, like, a hyper-masculine or, like, hateful behavior. It's more just a thing that they do. Like, it's right. almost, like, done lovingly that he just, like, picks on him the same way that they pick on James. And...
Right. It's a love language to just, like, bully them. Like, they're...
Right.
Because when they think that James is gonna leave, Michelle is so mad. She's like, you're one of us.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're a dairy girl. You love it here. And he's like, actually, I think it might just be Stockholm Syndrome. She's like, you've never been to Switzerland.
Right. Like, excuse you. But
Notably, Stockholm is in Sweden.
Right. I just, I really love it because, like, you know, Joe is, he's the kind of person where, like, he loves his daughters. He loved his wife who passed away. Like, he's very protective of Sarah and of his girls. And I don't think it's not in a patronizing way, because he does, like, listen to them and respect them and let them be their own people. He's just like being a good dad and grandparent. Mm-hmm. And we have Jerry, who very similarly, like, is really supportive of Mary when she wants to go back to school, and, like, straight up tells her, like, you could do anything you put your mind to. And, you know, he's a very sweet father. I really love it. Like, there's an episode where the girls lie to their parents and, like, sneak away to go to a concert. Mm-hmm. And, like, he sees the girls on TV as, like, part of the audience for this concert, and, like, notably keeps it to himself because he's supportive of his girls. He wants them to have a good time. And, like,
yeah,
he does a lot of really sweet things for them. And, we have James, who, despite being bullied by his friends, like, is really supportive of them and consistently shows up and does the things. And we see him, like, be so willing to go along with their plans, even when their plans are at his expense or, you know, at the cost of his own humiliation. Like, he's just like, yeah, but we're gonna do it anyway.
And he seems to have, he strikes up quite a sweet bond with Claire. Like, you can see that by the end of the show. Like, they're talking on the phone a bunch, and, like, they have clearly struck up quite a bond. And yeah, he's, like, he's in to do whatever with them. Like, he's on their team.
Right. He makes it very clear throughout the show, like, he is a boy, he is a lad, and he likes girls, and he's, you know, whatever, but he also, like, is very willing to go into the girls' bathroom and, like, put eyeliner on with the girls so that he looks cool like them, and, like, wear Orla's go-go boots.
He dresses up as Posh Spice to do their...
Yes! And performs, and, like, he dresses up as an angel like Claire Danes from Romeo and Juliet, and, like, goes out to a concert, and he you know, is wearing a face mask when he's, like, on the phone with Claire at the end of the show. And, like, I just love it because I'm like, it really speaks to, like, healthy expressions of masculinity. And I also appreciate, like, there's other men in the show that, like, I enjoyed and really liked. But one of the things I also appreciated is, like, we learned that Jerry is, like, a delivery driver. Mm-hmm. And he kind of makes it clear through some comments in the show that, like, this is not, like, a great profession or, like, his favorite thing to do or whatever. And, like, similarly, Mary works at Woolworths and, like, it's not her favorite thing. And I appreciate that one of the things they do in the show is show that, for them at least, like, it's contrasted, I think, with, like, Aaron, who's talking about, like, being this person who, like, gets to go and live her dreams and do all of these things. And for them, it's just like the world doesn't begin and end with their careers. Like, their priority is their family and, like, doing the things, and, like, doing this job that maybe isn't their favorite thing to do is worth it because at the end of the day, like, the purpose is to provide for their family. And maybe it's just because I'm an adult and have a adult job and, like, understand how the world works now versus how I did at 16. But I'm like, I appreciate that they have that contrast of realism with like Aaron, who's like, I'm going to become this person, I'm going to live out my hopes and dreams. And they're like, okay. But you have the middle ground with Mary, who's like, yeah, I want to go back to school. And Jerry, who's like, you can, like, I would support you in doing
that. Yeah, we'll figure that out. Yeah. There's also, like, the parents walk that line, though, of, like, they're still quite silly. Like, there's, for the episode where it's the reunion, they're, like, trying to lose a bunch of weight by going on an Only Oranges diet. And Jerry's like, how long have you been doing this? And they're like, 20 minutes or so.
Right. How much weight can we lose in 5 hours? And they're like, almost a whole pound. You don't stop jumping for at least 5 hours. Yeah.
And that Joe is just endlessly supportive. He thinks they can do basically anything.
Right.
Or like when Sarah gets accidentally engaged and they're like, ah, Jerry, you can tell Kieran about this, and just, they think it's, like, a completely reasonable way to handle the situation. So they're very, like, or the whole thing with Jenny Joyce's mom.
Oh my god.
They're like, so funny, the parents are. And it's clear that, like, or, like, when Joe starts dating some lady, and Mary and Sarah are, like, outraged by this, and their mom's been dead for, like, over 10 years or something, and they're they're just like, how could you do this?
I think that's one of the things we learn in that episode towards the end of of season 3, when they're going back to the school reunion, that the adults in the show are like almost 40 or in their 40s. I think some of the men are like in their 40s, but like the women are almost 40. So you have to think, if their mother died 10 years ago, they were in, like, their late 20s when this happened. I can understand that, like, really intense emotional kind of defensiveness that they seem to have around her still. it, like you pointed out, though, it is really funny to learn they're so young because they don't seem that young in the show. And, like, logically it makes sense given the girls' age, but just, like, even just Joe and, like, the way that he behaves and everything, and, like, you'd think they'd all be a bit older.
And I think part of that is probably, like, that they made them... They made them up to be a little older looking and sort of dowdy looking, specifically because most of the show is coming from the perspective of these teenage girls, to whom parents are always just, like, irrepressibly elderly. Like, they just think these...
Right.
They see their parents as, like, so completely old and out of the loop or whatever. Uh-huh. And it's, like, they're not actually... You know, it's that thing you learn as you grow up where, like, you're young and you just assume everyone over the age of 25 is, like...
Ancient.
One foot in the grave. And then you grow up and you're 31 and you're like, I'm still a child.
Right. It's one of those things, especially having existed on the internet for a long time, seeing children who are just like, you're 30 and you still exist in fandom. Like, how are you not grown? How do you not have, like, adult responsibilities? And it's like...
Like, babes, we invented online fandom.
Right. It's like, you don't even understand what's going on right now, but okay. Right, like, now we are the elders, suddenly.
And so it was funny to get that realization, because I had assumed that they were a little bit older than that, at least. But it is very funny, and they are just very, very unserious people. All, like, everyone in the show, like, the way they deal with, Great Uncle Calm.
Oh my god.
Who I also
I love him so adore. Much.
Him and Sister, like, Michael.
I would hate to be related to him, but I love him the show.
Every time he shows up and everyone's just like, oh, okay, we have to go save whoever he's talking to.
Right. He's just... I appreciate that as the show goes on, though, you realize that he can actually be quite funny and, like, tell really interesting stories. But because he tells them in the most agonizing way possible, like, nobody ever actually gets to appreciate his humor. Other than that one instance at the wake with Sister Michael, who's just, like, sitting there, literally out loud as he's talking, going, have I died? Is this hell? What am I doing here?
Like... But, you know, she'd do that for most.
She would, too. That's what's great about her.
I do love, though, that when there's a situation and they need to, like, get out of being in trouble because they're at the police station and they're suspected of, like, robbing their school, which technically they did help do, but, they're like, we can call Grand Uncle Colum and he'll come bore the police into letting us go.
And it
sort of works. Like, the police officer, who's played by Liam Neeson, of all people, which is so funny.
Right.
At the end, it's just like, leave and take him with you, please.
Did you know that Liam Neeson is from Northern Ireland?
Yes. I just think it's funny that they got him to play, like, this bit part in, like, two episodes of this show.
I love that they not only got him to, like, come and play the police officer in the episode, but that they brought him back just for a moment for that scene where they're all voting at the end. Like, it's just... so wonderful. Like, I need more details about that. I want to know how that happened. Yes. It's so good.
I also love that at the end of the show, there's an episode where they've got, like, a house guest who's
Eamon.
Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eamon.
Their cousin.
Their cousin Eamon is staying with them for a while because his roof caved in or something. And he's taking, the repairs are going very, very slowly because he's told them that he's not in any hurry. And Jerry is so over it because Eamon keeps breaking things in their house. And so he's like...
And stealing his clothes.
His shorts. And so his solution is to convince Great Uncle Colum that his two-bedroom apartment, or his, like, two-bedroom place is too big for him alone. And then wouldn't it be nice to... It's a little unclear about, like, how they're all related. Like, I don't remember exactly. So Because
so Aemon was the son of
Bridie.
Of Bridie, who is the sister of their mother, who has passed away.
Okay.
So he is their maternal cousin.
Right. And
Colm is Joe's brother. He's their paternal uncle. So Colm and Aemon are technically not related.
Right.
They're on opposite
Jerry's like, I can solve two problems at once.
Right. And Colm was like, no. No, and notably, like, he doesn't say it, but it's kind of just like, I don't have any familial obligation to him. And
right.
Like, I don't find him very interesting, so I don't want him to live with me.
He does say it. He's like, I just think he's a bit bored.
Right. He's like, I just don't want him to live there. Like, I'm good. Also, it is, you know, since we're bringing up Bridie, it is notable that Bridie's kind of a horrible person. Like, she's terrible. And finally, she, you know, pushes Mary a bit too far, saying really ugly things about... She's not saying ugly things about their mother. She's saying ugly things about them, like, and how their mother felt about them. And, like,
well, and it's just really also that, like, I believe she says some stuff about, yeah, she basically says some stuff that, like, you know, Joe raised them wrong, or, like, there's all this stuff.
Right. Like, their mother would be so disappointed in them and all these things, mm-hmm. and she'd be ashamed, and Mary gets really upset and tells her to drop dead, and then she does immediately drop dead. So everyone is convinced that she cursed her, and Mary is very much like, no, I'm a good Catholic girl. I didn't curse anybody. I don't even do that. Like, and I find the whole thing hilarious. Like, it's also set in the same episode where Sarah shows up late to someone's wedding wearing all white and just ruins
she's literally wearing like a whole, well, because it's Bridie's like daughter or something.
Yeah, it's someone they know for sure. And like, she just, it's so, like, it's just so horrible. She consistently does things that I'm just like, ma'am, why? You know what? I think ditzy might be like a good word for her. Like, she just,
yeah,
she gets me so much.
Yeah, everything that Sarah does is so funny.
I love her a lot, and I love too that she and Jerry have a very interesting relationship, because she'll just do these really unhinged things, and when he'll question her about that, she's like, I've always blah blah blah, you know that, Jerry. Like, he should be aware of why she's doing what she's doing, and he's just like, I don't, okay.
Yeah. It's so funny.
They're all really delightful.
Just so ridiculous. I will say the Bridie episode is also the episode in which everyone gets super high because Michelle makes makes weed scones and then Joe eats one.
Yes. This is how we know that he loves Jerry, because he tells Jerry he's doing a great job. And that's how they know that he's high, is because he told Jerry he's doing a great job.
And then they're like, they're trying to get them all back at Swake, but it turns out that Joe, like, squirreled a bunch of them away and brings them home for tea, and Aaron's just watching as everyone's like, oh, scones.
Also, the kids decide the way to get rid of the drug scones is to flush them down the toilet, and they promptly clog the toilet. And then
why would they not do it one at a time?
Right! Why would you not do it one at a time? Why would you fill the toilet bowl with scones? So
you crumble up one, you flush it, and then you do it again!
What kills me is they don't want to admit they were flushing drug scones, so Aaron's solution is to tell the parents the reason they clogged the toilet is because she had, quote, the scoots. And I just am obsessed with this. They're all asking, why were all your friends in there? She's like, I don't know, I panicked. Like,
moral support.
Moral support. Oh my god.
So funny. They also, we have the, like, ongoing feud they have with Dennis, who runs the store in town.
Yes.
Who hates them so much, but then at the end we find out Michelle, like, works there part-time.
Yes. Yeah, she ends up getting a job there part-time and starts acting like him, which I think is hilarious.
But, like, the episode where Bill Clinton is gonna be coming to visit, it's so funny because they go in to, like, get flags and he's got these ones that are, like, purple and pink and...
And missing 20 stars.
30 stars, and they're like, there are these, I don't think these are right. And he's like, yeah, they, 20 states left.
I mean, I think there's probably at least 20 states who wouldn't mind leaving at any given point, but like.
But it's just so funny, and they're like, we think we'd have heard about it if 20 states left. And he's like, no.
He's like, no. It's new. No, you wouldn't. It's so funny. There are a number of events that take place in different episodes in this show that are, like, either like, directly based on, like, a specific real event or, like, generally based on, like, similar events that happened around that time. Like you mentioned, Bill Clinton coming to Derry is actually a thing that happened, and... There's also, like, a reference to a bombing that happened. There is reference to Bloody Sunday, which was an actual event that happened. There's also references to some concerts that take place, including the Take That concert in Belfast, which did happen, I think, like, in a different year than what's shown in the show. And I love how they use... the events to kind of, like, do certain things and accomplish things within the plot. They also use TV a lot to communicate things in this show.
Yeah.
What is, like, there's do you think of the use of that?
Times. I thought it was really clever because there's a lot of points where, like, things will be happening, but, like, somebody will have the TV on and something will be happening on TV. So, like, we get news about the bombing via the TV. We get news about the IRA ceasefire on the TV. So all this stuff is, like, happening sort of in the background, but also, like, you get a lot of it with the parents who are watching TV and seeing what's going on in the world while the teenagers are busy doing teen things. And I think it's a really clever use of, like, showing both the passage of time, but also centering what's happening in their world sort of more broadly in, like, at the very end of the show, it's, they're talking about the Good Friday Agreement. And so I think using the TV, there's also just, like, you know, they'll have whatever is popular media going or whatever. The time.
I really liked the way they used it and the choices that they used, not just for telling the story through, like, TV footage, but also they actually used, like, historical footage for parts of the story, like things with, you know, Bill Clinton's speech and everything about the ceasefire and, like, just different things that they incorporated into the show, I thought were really powerful. And I like that it feels so 90s.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about it and them getting their news on TV. Like, not necessarily through, like, radio or newspapers, but, like, specifically through TV. And... you know, the way that James has a camera and he's, like, filming them and stuff and talking about this. And it's, like, obviously now we get a lot of our news off the internet and we all are filming things on our cell phones and whatever. But this is, like, kind of the precursor to that. And we're, you know, seeing this through the eyes of these people living in that time and, like, the way news was shared. And, like, I think it, again, does a lot to really ground it in, like, the reality of that time and experience.
Yeah. Yeah, and we see that through, like, you know, other things as well, as, like, the, you know, references to the Spice Girls, or, like you said, like, Take mm-hmm. That concert, or, like, Fatboy Slim, or, like, in the last episode, Claire's phone is the hamburger phone, and that's such a yes. 90s detail to include.
Yes, that
she has
it
the
is.
Hamburger phone, and, like, she keeps accidentally switching between calls on it, because it's so unwieldy. I just loved that, and, like, the fashion they wear, you know, there's, you know.
Yes.
There's a lot of, like, little hair bow sort of accessories, mm-hmm. or, like, they do the sort of little, like, two tiny pigtails at the side of the face.
Yes.
Kind of deal.
Mary's hair, or Mary's outfits in particular, really scream 90s to me. She's got, like, a lot of, like, the matching, like, two-piece formal outfits or whatever that she wears to different events that I was just like, oh, I remember, like, my mom in those outfits, or in photographs of those outfits, you know, in the 90s. They also do a lot with the music in this show to really, like, center it in that time that I just love.
Yeah, the music is really fun, and it's, like, so nostalgic feeling. Again, like, I was only alive for part of the 90s, and I was quite young for all of them, so a lot of it is stuff that I sort of picked up through osmosis as I got a little bit older, from, like, my older sister, or from the people around me, babysitters, stuff like that, but it was still very much stuff that I was hearing that I was like, oh my god, this song. Like, I haven't heard
right
that. I don't know if I ever even knew who sang this song, but this song, I know this song.
Right. Right. Yes. They do such a good job with the music. Particularly, one of the things that stands out to me is with the season one and season two finales, they use different songs by the Cranberries. And
I love how much they use the Cranberries.
I love that they use them so much. It's wonderful. And I also really love that they have two different scenes. The first one where we have the parents getting news of a bombing, which is incredibly heartbreaking, at the same time that the kids are so joyfully dancing at this, like, talent show at their school. They're just very unaware of the news. Right. And it's set to Dream, so it's got, like, this kind of bright, hopeful vibe to it, despite, like, kind of the horror that's going on in the background. You get this, like, really stark contrast. And then, kind of in, like, polar opposition to that, at the end of season two, the parents are at home learning about a ceasefire that is being put in place while the kids are at their school dance, reenacting the Carrie scene and, like, fighting, and you have Zombie playing by the Cranberries so in the background. Good. Like, it's such amazing writing and directorial work done to, like, give you these, like, feelings. And it really kind of, again, it's not just the setting that it really digs into, but it's, like, the emotional aspects of it, that you're seeing what's going on with the parents, but also with the teens, and kind of, like, they're aware of what's happening in the world, but it's not, like, really, it affects their everyday lives, and yet there's, like, an emotional distance for them because they are still caught up in being teenagers and, like, their own things.
Right, and it's not until that sort of last episode of the show, when they are turning 18 and are going to vote in the Good Friday Agreement, that we find out, like, Michelle has a brother who is in jail.
And right.
That she hasn't seen him since then because her mom won't let her. And, like, they are starting to grapple more with, like, all, and they're having to, like, you know, being handed the pamphlets about what the Good Friday Agreement is. And they're like, oh my god, we have to... They have always been aware of the troubles, but they haven't, I think, really understood them the way that adults would.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know in our DMs and stuff, I talked to you a little bit about how I felt about some of the stuff with the finale, and I'll share that.
Yes.
But why don't you share a little bit about your feelings first about some of the story choices and things that they made.
Just for the finale?
Yeah, like, I mean, like, was... you know, with the stuff with Niall and they're fighting and everything over the political aspects of it.
I do wish we had gotten more inclination that Michelle had a brother, like, at any point throughout the show, just because it was like, wait, she has a brother? Since when? Although I do sort of understand why he wouldn't have come up very often. I think the way that they centered this around, like, the 18th birthday party and the Good Friday Agreement, and also, like, the first communion party, all of that, I think was a really clever choice of, like, showing these various important stages of life that happen, and how, at, you know, the idea to, like, have the 18th birthday party and the first communion party be combined was really clever, because these are two very, like, for people who are Catholic, really big central events. I am not Catholic, so, like, my understanding of first communion is not super, super strong, but I understand that it's a really important sort of rite of passage in the Catholic Church, the same way that sort of turning 18 and voting for the first time is a really big sort of rite of passage. And so I liked those story choices they made. And I liked that there was some more adult conflict between the girls. Like, it wasn't as much over, like, you know, boys or clothes. Like, not that there was a ton of that stuff, but, like, this felt really more grounded in, like, the realities of growing up and realizing that you and your friends might end up on opposite sides of more world, more important, maybe, issues, and trying to figure out how to navigate things in that way.
Yeah. I really love that final episode. There's so much about it that really works for me. Normally when a show brings a character in that we have never heard of before and, like, didn't exist prior to now, in order to create some kind of, like, emotional, you know, punch, or, you know, give something some kind of emotional depth, it struggles to work for me, because I'm just like, but I don't know them. I'm not attached to this character. And I think the reason that it worked for me personally here is because, one, they don't center it around our empathy or feelings about Michelle's brother. They center the reactions and the feelings about it around Michelle and her family, and, like, what it means for her that her brother is in jail and that he might be released because of this agreement, and, like, what that stuff means. And also, just contextually, it makes sense to me that, like, we wouldn't have heard about him, because this is a very complicated and sensitive issue. You know, her brother killed someone, as, you know, part of this political, rebellion, and it's, like, a very dark thing. Like, she even says, like, her mom, like, won't let them talk about him. And notably, Dennis is the one who brings him up. Dennis, who is, like, of the age where he would have known her older brother.
Right.
But he doesn't have the emotional connection and sensitivity to Michelle that other people do, where he would, like, think better than to mention it.
Right.
So here he's has a reason, you know, Niall might get out of jail, and he's saying, like, oh, I wouldn't want to be him and have to live with you. He's kind of being a dick about it.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think anyone else who knew them and knew what it meant for them that her brother was in jail would, like, have the audacity to bring him up.
Especially not in that way.
No, definitely not in that way. So, like, when you start learning about it, you're like, oh. And it also, like, contextualizes some of the stuff with James. Like, both why they care so much about him, like, not just as her cousin, but, like, as this, like, male presence in her life, but also, like, why there's such negativity and, like, whatever, specifically from Michelle and her mom about him being English, because, you know, obviously it, like, is in contrast to her brother. But, like, I don't know, there's something really impactful about them having to actually work this out for themselves.
Right. And, like, this isn't something that their parents can fix for them. And mm-hmm. this isn't the kind of fight that's just going to blow over. Like, this is something where they actually have to talk about it in a more mature mm-hmm. way. And they do end up doing so. Like, they do end up having that conversation. And yeah. It balances well the sort of impulsive anger of being a teenager, where mm-hmm. you, like, are saying things and you know they're gonna hurt, but you say them anyway. And then the, like, later reflection of, like, that was sort of a dick move to say that.
Yes.
In the way I did. Like, that comes as you grow up.
Yes. And it also shows that transition from very, like, black and white thinking that young people have to more nuanced and shades of gray thinking that right. older people should be capable of. I'm not saying everyone is, but, like, that is a sign of maturity, is the ability to think in those ways and understand the nuances of those kind of decisions. And they're really being asked to think in that way and, like, have those considerations. And it also, to me, in some ways, it's an expansion on the earlier things that they've already dealt with in terms of, you know, differences amongst their friend group and some of the prejudices mm-hmm. they've been asked to kind of deal with. Because essentially they're being asked to consider this issue not just from a moral standpoint, but from, like, a human standpoint of, yes, her brother did a thing that is black and white, like, objectionably wrong. And so it's easy to look at that and say, okay, because he did something wrong, like, he should be punished for it, period. But this issue is obviously more complicated than that. And so now they're being asked, okay, but what about his family? What about the family of the people that, you know, the person that died? What about, you know, the long-term implications of, if we don't agree to this, will this negatively affect more people? But also on, like, a personal level, what does it mean for my friend that this is her brother right. and that right. I would be, you know, so objection to the reunification of her family? And they're having to,
right.
like, deal with that. And I think what, like, really works for me is we see Aaron talk to Joe about it. And she's asking, like, he's been reading the pamphlet. And she's asking him, what does it mean? What do you think I should do? And he's telling her, like, I'm not in the position to tell you. You are the young person who is going to live with the long-term impacts of what is decided. Like,
right.
the decision really needs to be yours, because you are going to live in whatever future is determined, like, based on the outcome of this vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is, first of all, great advice from him.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think it is something that, like, you and I have talked, not on mic, but plenty about the sort of frustration of being someone young who gets told, like, you are the people who everything, you know, can make changes when you grow older and make things the way you want them to be. And
mm-hmm.
you can be the one, you know, you're the ones who will have to live with this and, like, clean up this mess or that mess or something. And, like, mm-hmm. how frustrating that can be to then grow up and to have been charged with that and then to have people actively standing in the way of that. And so
yeah.
it is nice to see Joe really clearly being like, this is something that you all will have a role in making this choice and stuff right. like that.
So it's interesting too, because again, Nell and I are American. We can only speak to our American perspective. But it's a conversation that we've had, not just with ourselves individually, but also with other friends who live in other countries, about how one of the unfortunate side effects of the U.S. having such a strong military presence and also just political presence in general is that our politics often influence the direction of politics in other countries, often in negative ways. And it's not really presented as a negative, but we do see some of that in this show with the influence of the Clintons coming to Derry and, you know, them talking about getting to see the president and what it means for them that the president is coming there. He's not Ireland's president. He's not a British president. Like, he's an American president, but he's coming, and it's like an influential thing. And it's one of those situations now where, like, there's something about watching this that felt just like really universal in a lot of ways. And one of the things about the finale that I really loved was just the hope that really came through with the kids in this messaging of them recognizing the role they played in their future and the impact that they could have, and like really doing something about it. Them voting was like a really significant deal, but also like it wasn't just about the power of their vote. One thing the finale really emphasized was the power of their relationships and the community they have with one another, and what it meant for them just to care about one another and support one another and have difficult conversations, and the impact it made in that way. And I don't know, I guess as someone who like is American and deals a lot with our politics here, it just meant a lot to me to see in general that this was a show about these young people who were investing like in their future.
It's a show that on its face like feels kind of silly, but does deal with a lot of those sort of more real topics, and integrates them so well. Like, it never feels heavy-handed or sort of thrown in. Like, it all feels really naturally melded in a way that I really, really like. Because it would be easy for a show to look at a show and be like, oh my god, it's a show set during the Troubles. Like, that's going to be so hard. That's going to be heavy. And it's just not in that
way. Right.
Like, we deal with these topics, but it's not like a downer. There are sad moments, but much of it is very light and fun.
Yeah. It's a really delightful show. What we mentioned this a little before, but one of the other ways that the finale really shows us how, you know, people took charge of things for their future is also with Sister Michael. Like, you know, she is Catholic, and as a nun, she's kind of subject to the decisions made by those higher up over her in the church. And basically she's being told, we're going to move you. You're going to leave as headmistress and we're going to put you somewhere else. And she makes the decision to push back and say, no, like, my job is important. I'm making a difference here. I want to stay. And they ultimately agree to let her stay. And again, like, there's just something really hopeful about that, about the idea that like people can have some kind of actual control over the direction of their lives, and like take action to make a difference in the way that things turn out for them, it's not like the same as, you know, voting on such a significant political referendum, but like, it is important for her and for all of the girls that she's going to inevitably have a role in teaching. Like, she's helping to shape their future in that way, and she fought to stay.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up, any other thoughts about Dairy Girls and how great it is?
Gosh, I don't know. I love this show a lot. We breeze through a lot of it, but I just really enjoyed it and, like, appreciated a lot of it. You know what? One of the things that I really appreciate is how real they are in this show about how, like, teens actually talk and behave with regards to sex and relationships and, like, dating. It's really easy and often very common in stuff that I've seen, that we treat children and teens like they're just ignorant about sex, or that they're, like, supposed to be, like, very protected from sex. And in this show, they're very much just, like, no, they're very aware of what sex is, and they're having sex, and it's a thing, and, like, it's just, it's not, I don't know, sanitized in some way,
mm-hmm.
or treated, like, because they're teens, like, they wouldn't know. They don't dumb it down.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
And yet they're all so terrible at relationships. And I'm like, that's the truth. They know about sex, but they suck at dating.
That's the thing, is they're such 16-year-olds.
They are. Like, they're such teenagers. And, like, it just, it's very funny to me, like, how that works.
Yeah, that theoretically they're very good at everything. Practically speaking, no.
Yeah, no. Oh, goodness. Yeah, they make some very interesting choices, but yeah, I really enjoy it, so.
Yeah, I know. I really want to, there's stuff I want to rewatch.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are definitely getting into the holiday time, so starting next week we're gonna jump in and start watching some Christmas movies. Let me see here. I believe the one that we are gonna be covering next week is Season of Love. So if you're excited for the holiday movie time, definitely come and join us for that one. And if you are like our amazing friend Lyra and have any incredible recommendations for stuff that we should be covering, definitely let us know, because obviously we're up for it and here to watch all the things.
Yeah, I'm so stoked for holiday movies. This is going to be so much fun.
Yes, I'm very excited for fun, cute movies. We deserve it. We enjoy holiday stuff and it's going to be fun. So, all right, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Alrighty. Bye.
Bye.
Totally Normal About That is a podcast hosted and produced by Lucia and Mel. Are you feeling totally normal about something we talked about today? Is there a piece of media you feel totally normal about? We want to hear about it. You can find us on Twitter at @totallynormalAT, or you can email us at totallynormalaboutthat@gmail.com. And if you are enjoying these episodes, please leave us a rating or review on your podcast app of choice. Thanks!